All right, good morning, everybody. It is Thursday morning, May 13th, our last class and the end of the semester. And we were just discussing, I've been kind of talking for a little bit here, we were discussing Cabrillo's plans for the fall, Cabrillo's plans for the spring, and what it was I was thinking that we would do in this lab session. So I'm thinking that we're just going to kind of review and touch on everything and see where questions come up. And we'll see what sorts of problems, practice problems we can do as we go through this. So with the recording started, let me go ahead and do a screen share. All right, that should get us into the right spot. And now I can't see you guys, so I'm going to shift screens around for a second. That should do it. I can still see the chat. Hard part is to think about the chemistry that we did go through after spectroscopy. Maybe. Maybe I should grab notes. Most of those notes I put back away already. Okay, so I may miss some things. I think after spectroscopy, we started in aromaticity. Sometimes it takes just a minute for my brain to get going here, and once I fall into it, it'll start making sense. We looked at what makes aromatic. What it is that defines aromaticity. You guys remember the rules for what makes something aromatic? Can you quote me some of the things that an aromatic material, 2+2, 2N+2.
In terms of- I don't know if that's it or no, it was like, it has to have the integer value of some formula. I'll look for it.
Right, it's got to have the right number of pi electrons. So, but before even the right number of pi electrons, what has to happen is it has to be a ring. It has to be flat. It has to be fully conjugated. And then it has to comply with 4N+2 pi electrons. So that's where n is equal to an integer value, 0, 1, 2, so on. And it has to have that correct number of pi electrons. And then we looked at another component of that, which is Frost circle. Should show all bonding orbitals full. And non-bonding or anti-bonding empty. And for different different rings, we had differences in where the bonding and anti-bonding orbitals were. And this part, I don't know that, as I'm thinking about it now, I don't know that I fully did this for all the different ring systems. We'll catch it for just the common ones here real quick. And I don't think that we need to go up to 7, but that line that we call the barycenter, that is the division line between bonding and antibonding. Actually, I don't know how I can do this better. Just make it cleaner by going to a dashed line. So there's the barycenter there. That is the same for the four-membered ring system. When we go to a five-membered ring system, the barycenter is there, and a six-membered ring system, the barycenter is there. And so these are the divisions between the bonding and the antibonding orbitals. And maybe what I can do is take and just sort of align these so that they all sort of fall in the same way here. So above here, these guys on this side are antibonding. And down on this side are bonding. And that allows us to see the number of electrons, that these guys all should have 2 electrons in order to be aromatic. And when we get into 5 and 6-membered ring systems, they need to have 6 electrons to be aromatic. And that corresponds with the 4n plus 2 formula, that when we look at 4n plus 2 and we look at the value of n, when n is 0, 1, or 2, 4n plus 2 takes the value of 2, 6, and 10 electrons. And so we didn't get up into systems that would have 10 electrons. So beyond this, as we get up into 8-member ring systems, 9 and 10-member ring systems, then we can go up to the 10 electron type systems. But this is our wheelhouse. This is where we stick, sort of the 3, 4, 5, 6-member ring systems. And we don't typically go much above that. If we were to put a 7-member ring system in here, which is really the highest that I think I would go, then 7 would look like this. And 7 would still fit within the 6-electron system. And these would be antibonding. These guys would be bonding. All right, so you can kind of see, like I said, the placement of the line and knowing what's bonding and what's antibonding is not always clear. And that's the one problem with Frost Circle, is that it's easy to remember, oh, point down, draw the orbitals, and then fill in the electrons. That part's easy. But which of the orbitals were bonding and which were antibonding? That's not clear and changes depending upon what the ring system is. So it's not just like I pick half on the top and half on the bottom. That line, that division, falls in a number of different locations depending upon how big the system is. So, so that was the big part of aromaticity, was looking at Frost Circle and trying to figure out whether something was aromatic or was not aromatic. And then from aromaticity, we looked at chemical reactions of aromatic systems. The main reaction that we covered that was sort of the new reaction was the electrophilic aromatic substitution. And these electrophilic aromatic substitution reactions, as you recall, were governed where we had an electrophile that was positively charged or partial positively charged, where this guy just reached out, grabbed the electrophile, and we resulted, oops, put the positive charge in the wrong spot there. That's supposed to be hydrogen. We resulted in a species that had a positive charge in it. And then some base in solution would wind up pulling that proton, giving electrons back to the ring system. And we would wind up with the electrophile attached to the aromatic ring system. And we had our different types of groups that that we had electron donating groups. And these electron donating groups were activating. And ortho para directors. Those types of groups were things that were elements that had lone pairs on them that could do resonance sort of donations. We're talking things like ethers or amines. There was lots of different types of things that fit into that category. And then we had electron withdrawing groups that were deactivating. Slowed the reaction down and were meta directors. And these were things that that were connected to mostly things like carbonyls or things that had positive charges on them. Quat salts, that types of thing. Same thing with a nitro group that were strong electron withdrawing groups that were placed onto that. So there were other aromatic reactions that we had as well, but this was the primary thing that we focused on because the other stuff was kind of review within that electrophilic aromatic substitution. I mean, we had oxidations at the benzylic position, we had SN2 reactions at the benzylic position, we had carbocations at the benzylic position. So it was all about the benzylic position where the other types of reactions that we saw for aromatics, but this was the one thing that actually changed the aromatic ring system. And one of the big things that we found here that we could do is that we could do alkylations and acylations. These were all Friedel-Crafts reactions, Friedel-Crafts alkylation and Friedel-Crafts acylation. And so these reactions were all about ways to take an aromatic ring system and to react it with some sort of leaving group be it in alcohol, where we might use strong acid, that creates the carbocation that leads to the alkylation reaction. And any way that we can create that carbocation was ways that we could get into those types of reactions. And then the acylations were very similar. The acylations taking and bringing in an R group, we could do with an acid chloride and aluminum trichloride. These go through that acyl cation and allow us to be able to bring in the carbonyl group in that way. And so there were those reactions. And then we also had two reactions that were in this chapter to remove carbonyls. And we use that as a tool to be able to bring in a carbonyl group, use it as a meta director, and then take off the carbonyl. And so it looked like we got meta substitution, even though we had two groups that were put on there that were electron donating groups in the end. And there would have been no way to get them sort of together in a meta position. But we use this as a tool to put this on first, create a meta director, put in the meta substituent, remove the carbonyl. And those two reactions were the Wolff-Kishner and the Clemmensen. The Wolff-Kishner reaction took a carbonyl and removed it by reacting it first with hydrazine and then sodium hydroxide. And that generated nitrogen gas that would leave the reaction. And the other one was the Clemmensen. I can't remember if there's two M's in Clemmensen. Clemmensen used zinc and mercury amalgam with sodium hydroxide, I believe. I need to look back and see that second reaction. And this one reduces off the carbonyl, and I don't know what the byproducts are that come out of that one. But that one, the problem with it is really the mercury that limits the feasibility of using that. Although it really is tied up in that amalgam with zinc, which is why I think it's it gets quite a bit of use. So those were our two ways to remove carbonyls out of those reactions. And I think that completed sort of our look at aromaticity. It really was just a description of what aromaticity was, figuring out whether something is aromatic or not aromatic, and then the reactions of the aromatic systems and the electrophilic aromatic. And we skipped the nucleophilic substitution reactions. They go by a very similar mechanism. Well, they go by the reverse mechanism in that you have a nucleophile incoming. Something attacks the ring. The ring is the electrophile in those reactions. And they have sort of similar outcomes, but we skipped over those reactions. From there, we moved into diene systems. So here we were looking at addition to dienes. So electrophilic addition reactions. Q Here, what we looked at was taking a diene and adding in an electrophile, something like HBr, and getting the two different products where we could get direct addition and conjugate addition. So we had 1,2 addition and 1,4 addition. And with these, we added some terms here. This guy was kinetic. This guy was thermodynamic. And that had to do with the substitution of the double bond. Here we're monosubstituted. And in this one, we're disubstituted. But also, it had to do with diffusion time and allowing for diffusion for the nucleophile to diffuse here in the 1,2 addition. It required very little time for diffusion, whereas in the 1,4 addition, requires more time for diffusion. This one requires less time. And so those are some of the things that we had with the electrophilic addition reactions. After the electrophilic addition reactions, then we moved into Diels-Alder reactions. So here in Diels-Alder reactions, we had reactions that were concerted. They involved the diene and the dienophile. Making a six-membered ring system with a single double bond in the ring system. So it was a concerted mechanism in the way that these reacted. They were regio-specific. So regio-specificity means that if I have some sort of electron donating group and a specific electron withdrawing group that I create partial minus and the partial positive, and that these two components react together. And so out of the two possible outcomes, what I see is that this one is major. And that this one is minor. And that major was coming from putting the minus and the positive ends together in order to get the right regioselectivity. And then they were also stereospecific. So stereospecific had to do with looking at the orbitals that are being used in this chemical reaction. And the fact that if we have, let's do it this way. Stereospecificity, still partial minus to partial positive. The stereospecificity had to do with endo versus exo. So as these two come together, it was the highest occupied molecular orbital, psi two, and the LUMO, the lowest unoccupied molecular orbital, psi 3, coming together, and a preference for the endo product. And I know I may not be drawing the transition state here, but the endo product looked like this. And the exo product like this. And we can draw those transition states. We can show kind of where those transition states came from, endo versus exo. But endo was our major because there was three orbital overlaps. Which made this lower in activation energy. This one only had two orbital overlaps. Making it higher in energy in the way that went together. And I think that was the majority of what we did in Diels-Alder reactions. So looking at regiospecificity and stereospecificity and being able to predict the outcome of a Diels-Alder reaction. From Diels-Alder reactions, we skipped and went into carbonyl chemistry and started to look at carbonyl chemistry. Here we looked at the reactivity of different types of carbonyl compounds. And what we saw was that aldehydes were much more reactive than ketones, which were much more reactive than esters. These guys are more reactive than carboxylic acids. And they're a whole lot more reactive than carboxylates. So in terms of most reactive, and maybe what I should do is maybe then two bars here, maybe just one, that aldehydes are more reactive than ketones, but the reactivity of aldehydes and ketones is much closer than from ketones to esters, that esters are much less reactive than ketones. And it's not fully about the partial positive, that if we look at the partial positive on the carbonyl, that the partial positive on the carbonyls, ketones have the largest partial positive. Aldehydes are slightly smaller. Esters are slightly smaller, and they decrease as I go along. And so the partial positive doesn't fully explain the reactivity of carbonyl compounds, but what does help is the fact that there is more sterics. On the ketone and less sterics on the aldehyde. So that was the reactivity component that we looked at. And then we had a whole series of reactions with these where we looked at acetals and ketals. And those acetals and ketals all sort of fell into the same section in the book. And I don't even know that they differentiated them entirely within the book. But the acetals and ketal formation took a carbonyl compound and either two equivalents of an alcohol using an acid and some way to remove water, creating either the acetal or the ketal. And it works the same there. Or what we created was using some type of diol. And that diol then makes the cyclic acetal or ketal. And there can be different numbers of ring systems that we can create here. And there can be different substituents that happen out on this ring, some of them making that acetal or ketal more robust, and some of them making that acetal or ketal flimsier, weaker, easier to take off. So different, we have different types of protecting groups that we can put together there. And so the key thing is just to see it as a diol and that you're using the PTSA and Dean Stark trap in order to kick that thing out. And then to remove these, both of these were removed in much the same way. We take and treat them with water and an acid and usually some heat, and we can remove these and take them back off, regenerating the carbonyl. So they can both be removed. And we looked at many different examples of these, both intramolecular and intermolecular. So there was lots of variability. And we also saw that we could use these as protecting groups. So these could be used to make products, that are acetals or ketals, used for carbohydrate chemistry, and as protecting groups. So that we could do other reactions. So there's all sorts of uses that we pulled those guys out for. After the acetals and ketals, Then it was a series of other chemical reactions on carbonyls, but most of which was review because we had already seen many other reactions. For instance, we saw that, you know, we could take alcohols in order to make carbonyl compounds. So we're looking at oxidations. We looked at reductions. And we also looked at alkylations. Or nucleophilic addition. So we could have Grignards. So these were all sort of review reactions that we had already used carbonyls for, but the new reactions these were things that were the taking the carbonyl and reacting it with nitrogen type compounds. So R NH2 to be able to make imines and reacting it with R2NH secondary amines. In order to make enamines. And then both of these guys were all reversible as well. These guys could be reversed by adding water and acid and some heat. And we put water back into these reactions. Actually, I don't need to draw that, I can just draw. And we can hydrolyze these and get these things back too. And there were many other sort of imine and enamine examples that we showed. And we went through and we showed those reaction mechanisms. And the thing that was common to these new reactions, the imine and the enamines and the carbohydrate chemistry, was all sort of that assisted leaving step within the mechanism. That the key thing here is that there was no SN2 steps. In these. And that was an important aspect of those reactions. Okay, and then we went from there and we started to look at, this was the most recent stuff that we did, starting to take carbonyl compounds and be able to do calculations of these at the beta position. I'm trying to think how I want to describe these. They're alkylation reactions. At beta position. So here what we did is we used a base, something like LDA. And then two, we use some sort of electrophile with a leaving group. Usually this is primary or secondary alkyl halide. And it goes through the enolate. And then that enolate alkylates, making a new carbon-carbon bond. And so if we look at 1, 2, and 3, that would be 1, 2, and 3. And so these are the alkylation reactions where we find that the proton that is here is acidic. And that proton can be pulled by a number of different acids, and that we could do different types of alkylation reactions with these carbonyl compounds. And we even looked at some differences in kinetic versus thermodynamic. It was sort of the last step that we were showing, that we can have two different sides, maybe like this, and that, that I can have kinetic conditions and thermodynamic conditions. So if I use a bulky base, something like LDA, and then I treat this too with the RBR, I can link to the R group. Actually, let's link to the R group just here, do it that way. Or if I use weaker small base, something like NH2, and then the R group, and what I can do is create this guy. So this is major kinetic product. This one would be major thermodynamic. And so I had some control over the different products that I could create from that. And that was where we cut it. Now from here, this is the introduction to a whole section, which is just a beautiful section that has a lot of different newer reactions, which I don't think I'm going to hold you to, but I think that it's just kind of cool to be able to see that if you take something that is like acetone and react it with that base, let's just use LDA, and then two, I throw in something like benzaldehyde, that these guys will do that exact same reaction, but react with the partial positive that's here. And so what we wind up creating is a new bond going through the enolate, doing the exact same thing, but it reacts to make a beta hydroxy compound. And these are called aldol reactions. They're exactly the same as what we were doing up here. So this same reaction where we used just an alkyl halide as a leaving group, here all we're doing is we're using a carbonyl as an electrophile. And these reactions are super cool in that you can get self-condensations and cross-condensations if you do the reaction correctly. Like, for instance, if you just take acetone and you react it with potassium terbutoxide, which is not a strong, not a super strong base, it pulls the proton. It makes the enolate. But then in solution, you also have more of that acetone, and it reacts with itself and condensates and then picks up a proton. And you end up with these types of products, which are super cool, which means that it can just react with itself. So all of these aldol reactions and aldol condensations is a whole series of reactions that all look very different. But once you just understand the mechanism, you realize that they're all the same and they all become fairly simple to do, except trying to figure them out in reverse. The idea of how do I use this in synthesis? How do I tear this down in reverse? This allows you to be able to take some of these products and when you look at the products and we find where the R groups are located, what you do is you work from the carbonyl, 1, 2, 3, you find where the alcohol is located, and the new bond is the bond that is between 2 and 3. This allows you to be able to break that bond retrosynthetically and say that this thing came from that guy reacting with that guy. And then you can keep working backwards in your synthesis to figure out what it is that you need to do. But this little idea here, or concept, of finding the 3-carbon pattern going towards the alcohol and breaking between the 2 and 3 bond. And then sometimes the important part too, is that these reactions, if you heat them, go through an elimination. So that if I heat this, I end up with an alpha beta unsaturated ketone. And yet when I do the retrosynthesis on this, I'm still doing the same thing, 1, 2, and 3. And I'm tearing it apart between the 2-3 bond. And retrosynthetically, it goes back to the same thing. it goes back to the carbonyl, and it goes back to a carbonyl on the other side, where this was carbon number one, carbon number two, and that guy is carbon number three. And that's a whole series of reactions. Like I said, I might just give you a little taste of that in lecture a little bit more today, because it's such a huge area of chemistry, and that there are reactions that involve taking and reacting aldehydes, taking and reacting ketones, crossing ketones and aldehydes, taking and reacting esters. And you could do this reaction with esters. And there's a whole series of reactions with this. There's a whole series of reactions with esters, with aldehydes and ketones, where they do this sort of reaction. And then what you can do is with an ester like this, you can break the ester, and then you can actually cause the ester to decarboxylate, and you can get rid of the ester. And so the ester is a way to be able to do the alkylations, and then you can make the ester completely disappear. And these are all similar Aldol-like reactions. They fit under a whole family that all have different names, but are all exactly the same reaction mechanism. And yet they lead to a great diversity in reaction products and an entryway into reaction products. And the really cool thing about them is this is much of how your biological chemistry makes new carbon-carbon bonds. And these can all be done in aqueous systems because the protons start becoming so acidic that they can be pulled by hydroxide. And so this type of chemistry, making carbon-carbon bonds like this, this is how many of your enzymes actually function within your body and actually make and break carbon bonds, is going through many of these aldol type reactions, which is where it gets really, really cool. So we're not going to get to all of that, but I just wanted to kind of show you where that sits. Okay, I've been chatting for a while here now. You guys have just let me go. But I've kind of gone through an entire review of everything that we need to cover, and we're going to sort of cut it at these alkylations. So the aldol reactions. We're going to cut it here. Like I said, I want to show you some of those aldol things, but we'll see how much of that I actually show you in lecture. Okay, the other big thing is that, let me stop this screen share. Is that many of you are transferring next semester. And per usual in my organic chemistry class, this is about the extent of where I get. Sometimes I get through the aldol reactions and we get through all of those aldols, but I never really fully get into the amine chemistry and the carboxylic acid chemistry. I never fully get into the biological sugar chemistry and all that other stuff that most other classes do, because they're going more on the surface and they're moving a lot faster, which means that some of that chemistry you will not have seen as you move on and you go on. And as a biology major and having gone through organic chemistry, they generally expect you to have seen some of that chemistry. That chemistry is not hard to pick up and not hard to do because it follows many of the mechanisms that we already covered for much of the smaller stuff. But I know that that can create some anxiety if you're moving on and you're saying, well, wait, if my class didn't cover everything that I'm supposed to know, what am I supposed to do? And what I've created for you, see about how I get there to show you. And I'll put them online but they're not online yet. Shoot, where did my Zoom go? I want to do a screen share. And let me just do desktop too. And let me show you some of these. So the enolate chemistry that I was just describing. This is a review sheet and practice problems for all of the aldol, clazon, malonic ester. And it's all in my notes with problem sets and answers and how to put it all together. And it describes each one of the types of reactions so that you don't have to go back through the book and try to read it or grab it from the book. You have it in the same sort of format that I would always present it to you, just in my handwritten notes. And this goes through all the different alkylation steps. And I mean, everything is here for all of the aldol type chemistry. Okay, besides the aldol type chemistry, I also have that put together for carbohydrate chemistry so that you get the sense of how carbohydrate chemistry works and how we draw these things, how we work from Fischer projections in order to get to, or from structural projections to Fischer projections, how to draw all of the structures. All the stuff here is for carbohydrate chemistry. All the nomenclature, everything is in there. I did the same thing for amine chemistry. And so there's amine chemistry notes that are here too, and I'll put them all online. And what I would say is just go ahead and download these, keep them on your computer. And if you happen to need them or you hit a section, I've got one for peptide chemistry. So as you go into biochemistry and you need to understand a little bit about peptide chemistry, this has all the peptide chemistry that's there and shows you how amino acids work and how to do synthesis with amino acids and all the different structures and how they work and mechanisms. And all of that stuff is put together for the peptide chemistry as well. So that, yeah, I'm going to post those, JC, on the website. And the other thing about the website is I'm going to leave the website up. I'll take down last semester's website and I'll archive this one and I'll put this one in last semester's place. And then, because I'll be teaching 12B again in the fall. And then in the fall, I'll leave our class archived so you can get through it for another semester yet. Or you can go back through things and look at things as much as you want to for a semester. And then after that semester is over, if I'm teaching 12B again, I'll just keep rolling through them. So I'll archive 1 year previous and then keep it up for at least a semester. And if I can, I'll keep it up for a year. It just depends upon how long they'll let me actually keep things online on my website. And when I start hitting that threshold of I've put too much content online, I've got gigabytes of huge gigabytes. I think I'm getting close to a terabyte worth of videos up online already. And so they're not going to let me keep putting stuff online because I don't pay for that much data space. And it's my own personal website. So I have to see what they allow me to keep going. And they haven't sent me a message saying, hey, you're over yet. So until then, I'll keep archiving things and keep it up all online. So I'll make that all available. And I'll explain that a little bit more and show you where to find it in lecture two. Okay, I didn't do any sort of review problems. I just sort of gave you everything in review and showed you what it is that we're going to cover and what that test is going to look like or the information that you can expect to see on that test. But I didn't do any sort of review problems. And I didn't have any on the top of my head. Usually what I do in reviews is I don't come in with a set number of problems. I come in with just sort of, this is a review of the topics. And then if there's any questions or you want me to try to find problems to do for a certain type, or you feel weak on a type, or you whatever. I work off the questions and then try to build some sample problems from those. So I don't know how you guys are feeling so far.
I know I'm not as strong on the dying systems and the Diels Alder reactions. So I'd like practice with those.
Okay. Let me see what I can do. Gonna go back to screen sharing on the iPad. All right. With dying problems, let me see what I've got. Maybe I can find something off of pull some exam problems. I'm looking to see if I have any dying problems that are good. Of course not. Lots of deals, all the problems, but not as many dying problems. All right, so here's one. How do we start a problem like this? Where do we even start?
I don't think it wrote, Jason.
I was going to ask.
Oh, it just came up, actually. Okay. It just popped up.
Cool. The window's missing on me, so let me find the window. Usually, if the window stays active and it is the front window on my see if it stays active there. I can't see it. Usually I can see it where it mirrors it. There it is. Okay, now we should be good. All right, so where do we start with a problem like this? What do we even do?
Would we look at the carbocation intermediate and see what would be most stable?
Yeah. And so what we have is we have four different intermediates that we need to take a look at and see. So that's absolutely right. And so what we do is draw all four. And then look and see what is going to be the most stable out of all four of those. And so as we start that process, it's kind of a lengthy process. There's our molecule. We're going to do this four times. So I'm just going to take this and copy this. And we're going to try to look at all four. I think I need to get them just a little bit more squished together. So that they all stay on the page at the same time. So first place, I'm going to pick up that proton. And I'll put the proton out here. And the positive charge in that position. I'll do the same here. But now this time the proton goes out to the primary end. And the positive charge fits there. And the secondary, second double bond I'll react with. And I'll just go down the line. Okay. So having done that and drawn each of the structures that result in protonating the double bonds in the different positions. And so if I go through and I number my carbons and I say, all right, this is my diene system 1, 2, 3, and 4. I protonated at 3, I protonated at 4, I protonated at 2, and I protonated at 1. So I kind of worked backwards in my numbering system, but I was able to protonate at each of the different locations. Now we can call this A, B, C, and D. All right, so as we protonated each one of those positions, what do I need to consider in terms of stability and which one of these is the most stable?
You have to see what double bond is the most substituted and where the positive charge is most stable as well.
Yeah. And I think the main thing to consider, though, that I didn't hear in your language, but I think I heard in your words, is to consider it in terms first of resonance, and then in those various resonance contributors, figuring out where the positive charge is most stable. So that one has resonance. This one has benzylic resonance around the ring system, which I don't think I'm going to draw because I all want it to all kind of fit on here. And we always know that the aromatic ring system regenerates, but it's good to recognize when we have benzylic resonance that is a component. And so this is the only one that has no resonance. Is A. And so I would say that A is out and is not one of our more stable cations that are created. Then we've got these other systems that we've got to consider, B, C, and D. So how do we rank these now between B, C, and D into which one is the most stable?
Would B be the most stable? Because from that, a resonant stabilized molecule, you can still push that positive around the benzoic ring.
Absolutely. Nice. So this is tertiary benzylic, which means that it has all the resonance that continues to go from this through the benzylic resonance. Absolutely. Right. And so this one was secondary, tertiary benzylic. This one was tertiary benzylic. And this one is secondary and primary. So I think within that, you can see that this has the additional resonance contributor beyond the benzylic, right? And so that B looks like B is our winner in terms of secondary and tertiary benzylic and having the most resonance. And so B looks like the most stable. So now what happens though, is that's not my final answer. Now I need to take B and look at resulting products. So now what I do is I take the two main structures from B and I look at brominating both of these. Those are going to give me my two products. And then I need to decide kinetic versus thermodynamic and which one of these is major. Okay, so this was 1,4, and it's the less substituted. This is 1,2, and more substituted. When I'm saying less substituted and more substituted, I'm referring to the double bond in terms of its substitution. And I should use, instead of sub, I should use add, 1,4 addition. And this is 1,2 addition. One, two, three, four. So we can see both the 1,2 addition and we can see the 1,4 addition, and we can see less versus more substituted. Everybody on board? Okay, so help me decide between 1,2 versus 1,4, which one of those is kinetic and which one is thermodynamic? Is 1,2 kinetic or thermodynamic? Don't worry about the double bond. We're just looking at the addition. Which one of these is a faster addition? 1,2 is faster. Yeah. So this 1,2 is kinetic. 1,4 is oftentimes thermodynamic. Takes more energy. So And maybe I shouldn't say kinetic versus thermodynamic. Maybe what I should really say, I'm going to change this. Maybe what I should really say is less energy, more energy. Okay, now more substituted versus less substituted. This is where we look at what's more stable versus less stable, right? And so a more substituted product is more stable.
Is this one of those products that would be major under all conditions?
Yes, that's what I was trying to get at.
Yeah. All right.
That's exactly where I was going with this. This is how I wanted you to analyze the products and taking a look at the products and figuring out whether we have a kinetic versus thermodynamic situation or whether we have a product which is major under all conditions. And the way you sort that out is you look at whether or not, you look at your 1.4 versus your 1.2. 1.2 is always less energy. So this is telling me about my transition state and where my transition state sits, whether my transition state is less energy or more energy. And then the substitution of the double bond tells me about the stability of the product and which product is more stable. And so what's happening here is that if we look at this system, and this is our sort of intermediate that we were coming from, this is the carbocation intermediate. And then I say, all right, the product on the right-hand side, this is going to mess with you guys, and I apologize, but I think it will actually make sense. The product on the right-hand side takes less energy. This is my transition state. The product on the left-hand side takes more energy. It has a higher transition state. So I've set up sort of my transition states. And then the other thing that I do is I look at where my products are. The one on the right has the more stable product. So I'll put that one down lower. And the one on the left is less stable. So energy-wise, what I'm doing is I'm going through a reaction that looks like that. And a reaction that looks like that. Kind of move those guys into where I want. The reason I'm saying this is messing with you is because this is forward and this is also forward. Usually when we do an energy diagram, the energy diagram only goes to the right and I only ever do it to the right. Normally what I would do is I would draw it this way and I would flip this one. And I would say less stable, but because I have them left and right, sometimes it's nice to take a product and say, well, what happens if I go this way? And what happens if I go this way? And what you're coming out with is that, this one is always major. And it's always major because it has the lowest E sub A. And it's more stable. And so that's going to be my major product coming out of this. Did that analysis make sense in terms of where I was going with that? So the rules are, when we have a dyeing like this, and we're doing addition to the dyeing. Number one, sit down and find all four carbocations. Look at the resonance. After looking at the resonance, decide which of the carbocations are the most stable carbocation. Work from the most stable carbocation. Take that carbocation and draw the two products that result from it. Ask yourself the question, which one is 1,4, which one is 1,2, which one is less substituted, which one is more substituted? Sometimes it will happen that you will have one that will be major under all conditions. Sometimes you will have one that is major kinetic and one that is major thermodynamic. And then we have to go back and we have to ask, what are the conditions? Was it kinetic or was it thermodynamic? So here's the set. It works this way. Draw all four carbocations. Analyze resonance. Find most stable. And by finding the most stable C plus, I'm saying that you're going to have two resonance contributors. It is both resonance contributors. So that's then going to lead me to two products. Number four, draw the two products. Number five, analyze 1,2 versus 1,4. And more sub. Versus less. Then what we need to do is we need to decide on our conditions and what, well, let's decide this. If it is if one, two substitution and more substituted, this one's always major. If one, two, and less substituted versus 1,4 and more substituted, then this one is kinetic. And this one is thermo. Okay, so how do I decide between kinetic and thermo, which one is going to be major? Kinetic is major when these are lower temp, and short reaction time. Thermodynamic is higher temp, and long reaction times. Okay, if there was no data, no reaction conditions, then you assume thermodynamic. Yeah, it looks a lot more intimidating than it actually is. It's just a longer process. This type of problem has a lot more steps to it that need to be completed and a number of places to make errors. And it's using a lot of skill sets that we combined all the way from first semester through second semester. So it combines a lot of skill sets, but in actuality, it's really not as bad as it looks, as long as you take each skill set individually, you know? And so we've got, you know, five steps to resolving what the actual answer to the problem is. Draw all four carbocations, analyze the resonance, find the most stable, draw the two products that result from that, analyze the 1,2 versus 1,4. If you get 1,2, and it's also the more substituted, it's always major under every condition. If you have 1,2 and less sub versus 1,4 and more substituted, then you look back at the reaction conditions. If those conditions are kinetic, you go for the kinetic product. If they're thermodynamic, you go for the thermodynamic product. If there's no conditions given, just assume thermodynamic and go for that one. And that's a whole breakdown in how I would attack that type of problem. How do we do? That sort of kick it for dienes? All right, let's look at a Diels-Alder problem then. Okay, Diels-Alder problems have a set of sort of steps to go through as well. And we can always break them down into individualistic steps. Okay, so here's a Diels-Alder problem. And generally all we do with these is we just add heat. And we say, all right, what is the result of this? With these types of problems, you have to sort out two things. Number one, you need to look at the regioselectivity. And that is finding your partial positive and partial minus. And number two, you need to look at the stereo. And really, that stereoselectivity is about finding the endo product and drawing the proper endo product. So as we do this part, the main thing here is to look at the electron donating groups that are on the diene and to follow a resonance pattern that looks at where these guys push and that they're all pushing towards the same position. And when I say push, and I'm like looking at an electron donating group that's out on the terminal end like this, follow it to its conclusion, push in, push in, push in. See which terminal end the electrons are going to, because they're not going to stop in the middle of the diene. They're going to push out to the terminal end. And so we're asking about these two positions. We're asking about this position and this position, and which one of these positions has the partial minus. On the dienophile, we are looking at these two terminal ends and asking which one of these ends has the largest partial positive. And so on this one, we're looking at pulling it up onto the electron withdrawing group, and we see that the partial positive resides here. That means that these two guys need to then go together in their orientation. So I need to flip one or both or the other in order to put them into the right orientation. You know what I'm going to do? So I'm going to take that, copy it, put it down here, and delete everything that I threw into this. Okay, so this is Regio. And once I have sort of figured this out, then what I can do is draw it in the correct orientation. I'm going to move that out to make room for this group. Partial minus to partial positive. And then my electrons are going to push around the ring system. That way. And I have oriented this group endo. Now I can draw this three-dimensionally and understand the endo model, or I can go back to my pre-drawn model. I like to do it three-dimensionally just because it helps me to really see the reaction taking place. So there's all my groups. There's where the bonds are going. Electrons are flowing around the system. And as I draw that out, the methyl group is up. The other group is endo, that's exo. The hydrogen, remember, rotates up, out, and this rotates sort of down as that reaction goes forward. And that back TMS group sits on an sp2 hybridized carbon. And because it's on an sp2 hybridized carbon, it's flat, so I don't need to worry about that. Now I just need to take this and translate it into a standard flat drawing. If it helps, put the hydrogen in. And then always remember that these come out plus minus. And that is the endo product. The other product has the same stereo center here, but would have these guys flipped. And this would be the exo product. So this endo product, that's my major product that comes out of this reaction. So it's about finding the partial minuses, partial positive, and then just remembering preference for the endo product. And also remembering to write plus minus once the product is done. So the Diels-Alder doesn't have as many things to decide between as others. Oh, let me ask you this. What's up with this TMS group? And why have I seen this TMS group on a lot of these different dienes? That TMS group is there because this diene in particular has a special name. And I'm going to blow the name. Danishevsky diene. I don't know if I'm spelling it correctly. I always need to look up that name in order to be able to spell it. And the reason that name, or the reason that diene has a particular name, is because that diene finds a tremendous amount of use in synthesis. We use it a lot. Let me take this product and show you what we can do with this product. Do you remember what the TMS group is? Protecting group. Do you remember how to remove it, JC? TBAF, exactly. One, TBAF. Two, dilute acid. If I do that with the TMS group, good memory, then what I create is the alcohol, right? And so I can remove that protecting group and I can get the alcohol. Good, Drew. Remembering the dilute acid in there. Okay, but anything special about this alcohol? Look closely.
It's an enol.
Yeah, what do enols do?
I'm so bad at saying the word, but the
tautomerize.
Yeah.
Tautomerize. They tautomerize. Exactly. I'm always reminded of, what was it, Dances with Wolves? And Tatanka, the word for buffalo, tautomerize, Tatanka. It tautomerizes. And so it goes to its ketone form. And that ketone form now allows me access into other types of chemical reactions, because now I can go through and I can do some reactions on this carbonyl, right? And so maybe what I want to do that carbonyl is I want to react it and alkylate it, or I want to do an aldol reaction with it. Or I want to add to it with a Grignard or do something else to extend this. It gives me a handle, something else that I can go through and do more chemistry to this guy on. And so that's where that Danishevsky diene comes in, is because it's actually just a protecting group. It's a protected enol. And it allows me to do the Diels-Alder and then get into all kinds of other chemistry, which is super sweet. So just being able to see that, and recognize for what that Danishevsky diene does is super cool. But anyway, that's an overview on the Diels-Alder as well. And so less steps in the Diels-Alder. It may feel less familiar, but certainly less steps than additions to the dienes. Okay. And we can hit some more questions in lecture two. So we've got a bit more time. And then I have some words of advice and some parting thoughts in terms of lecture. I think, unless there's any further questions, that's pretty much all I got for you guys today.
I do have a question, but I'm kind of afraid to know the answer.
Oh, no.
What are we doing with that formal report?
I'm just going to grade that formal report and it's going to be fine. And, you know, that formal report is such a small part of the lab grade, and the other part of the lab grade is the fact that you guys have been here with me every single day and done everything that I've asked you to do in terms of hanging in there with me, doing these review sessions, going through and doing the problem solvings, and you guys have been awesome. So
So do you want us to turn in like what we have so far for like the benzoin thing?
No. I'm not going to ask you to do that.
Okay, cool. All right.
No, I'm not going to ask you to do that. That would be majorly uncool of me to do. And I'm not going to do that to you at this late date.
I was scared for a second.
No, don't be scared. That's what I say. Ask those questions. It's all cool. Yeah, I'm not going to do that to you guys. I always feel when you reach this part in the semester and you start throwing unreasonable expectations at students, it's kind of an asshole maneuver. I mean, students have other classes and other projects and other things that they have due that they've sort of like scheduled. And then to throw things at you last minute is completely unreasonable. So, I don't play those games. So it is what it is, and it'll be fine. And you guys are all going to be very happy. Okay. Does that hit it, or is there anything else? All right, let's take a break and I'll see you back at 12:40. All right, thanks you guys.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you guys.